passport photo. Oh, no.
Amateur Traveler, episode 490. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about St. Basil's Cathedral, Red Square, the Kremlin, the Metro, and secret Cold War bunkers as we go to Moscow, Russia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Don't forget to check out more information on that Cambodia trip, April of 2016, in amateurtraveler.com/trip. And now, let's talk about Moscow. I'd like to welcome the show Alex Block from alexblocktravels.com, who's come to talk to us about his home city of Moscow, Russia. Alex, welcome to the show.
Hello, Chris.
So, Alex, why should someone come to Moscow?
So, these days, Moscow is changing a lot, though just probably for most of your listeners who haven't heard about it for the last few years, Moscow is known as a very, very expensive destination with a little bit unfriendly people, with a little bit hard to get, with lots of problems with traffic, and lots of things are changed for the last couple of years here. And also, though Russia now going through big economic problems, Russian ruble is going down. So it's a lot cheaper now to come here, to live here, probably twice as cheaper as, for example, a year ago. So for those who wanted to visit maybe at some time and leave it for some other time, now maybe it's a great time to explore.
And you say twice as cheap as it was last year or half as expensive.
Yeah.
My impression was Moscow itself was pretty expensive, while rest of Russia may have been less expensive.
Yeah, it absolutely is, because Moscow is not Russia, and Moscow is very expensive. Just for many years, it's been on the top of the list of the most expensive places, most expensive cities around the world, and the hotels, I believe, 5 or 6 years have been on the top of the list of most expensive to be. Just to give you a brief idea, the average fare for the hotel was around $250 for a night for a double room. It was absolute average hotel, not maybe in the very center of the city, and was really big problem to find something cheaper. So now things are getting better because the ruble is not as strong. As I tell you, it's, you know, just twice cheaper as it was. Things, of course, are getting changed a little bit, but still now it's good time, good value for money in terms of visiting the city.
Okay. And what kind of itinerary would you suggest for someone who is coming to Moscow for the first time?
I think I need to mention first that Moscow is really a big and huge city. So just to give a really nice itinerary, I need to have at least 1 week to spend here. And probably you will spend first 3 or 4 days just discovering very major sites, and just want to mention many of them and some of them which probably many have heard about. Just for sure, one of the first place to stop is Kremlin, which is the residence of Russian government where President Putin is working. It's not his home, it's just government buildings, but still it's very official and it's absolutely fine to get inside of it. There are lots of tourists, there is absolute possibility to go, so it's probably first place to be. The next thing to see is, of course, Red Square with that UNESCO World Heritage St. Basil's Cathedral with that mausoleum of Lenin where you can see the body of this ex-Soviet very famous man. Probably a little bit weird for someone, but still, I believe, interesting to have a look. Also, there is a very beautiful classical Russian store called GUM. Beautiful to see, beautiful to explore, not maybe not so beautiful to have a shopping because the prices there are very high, even in terms of the same goods which you can buy on Europe, the prices are really high. So luxury stores, very beautiful. And one of the funniest things to do there that I probably can recommend everybody to explore is that inside of this shop you can find very classical Soviet-style toilet, which is absolutely luxury toilet. It's just fun experience, probably, and it costs you around $2 to get inside of it, and it's very interesting to see. It's all made with marble, very new, very modern, just amazing stuff working there, just helping you with everything you can imagine, just... So it's very nice to visit it and very fun to explore. The next things that you probably want to explore in Moscow is Tretiakovskaya Gallery, which is also a famous gallery of Russian art in the city. Then goes Pushkinsky Museum, also well-known museum. Probably you didn't want to have a close look to the main building, but I definitely can recommend you to explore any other parts of this museum. Especially, I would like to mark Art Gallery of the European American Culture Countries of the 90s and 20th Century. That is the building which is located on the left side of the main building of this museum. And it holds really surprisingly good collection of Impressionism. It's not very well known, but still it's a really great place to explore. So if you love this kind of art stuff, so if you like Impressionism, I highly recommend you to go there. Because a few years ago, I didn't know that it exists and there is such a good collection of art there. So definitely, if you love Impressionism, and I know that many people love it, go there. Really absolutely worth.
Okay, let's slow down and go back a bit over some of those in a little more detail.
Okay.
You started us, not surprisingly, with the Kremlin.
Yes.
So what can we see at the Kremlin? How much access do we have? I mean, obviously, it's a working government building, and so there's security measures and all those things in place.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't know exactly how much access you get as a tourist, or how much preparation do you have to have a tour ahead of time, or can you just walk up and get on a tour?
It's absolutely fine just to walk in, to buy a ticket and go inside. You, for sure, you'll have some security screening up there.
Sure.
Of course, you couldn't get inside of the main buildings, but still inside there is the opportunity to visit a couple of museums, a couple of churches, to go to the squares. But absolutely, you can be sure you're going to visit most of the buildings because there is some big concert hall which is used only during some events.
You say a couple museums and a couple of churches. I see a number of different churches. Are there ones that you recommend? You shouldn't go to the Kremlin and not visit what?
I definitely couldn't say that I wouldn't recommend something. So definitely just go explore the area. There's a lot to see. It's very, very beautiful. It's very classic. I think there's nothing to miss.
Is there something that a lot of people do miss when they go?
Probably there is just very well-marked tourist trail inside of the Kremlin, and there's simply you cannot go outside of it, but you still cannot miss something. So there are some objects inside of it. I think you need at least three or four hours to explore. I think that will be enough, but still, it's hard to miss something, but it's easy to find everything.
Okay.
So nothing particular I can recommend inside of the Kremlin.
Okay. And the Kremlin buildings are going back, I know, for centuries. I don't know how old the oldest part of the Kremlin is, and I don't know if you know off the top of your head. Looks like it's 1300s.
Yeah, it's kind of this because Moscow was founded in the 12th century and the Kremlin was built, I believe, in a couple of centuries after Moscow was founded. Still, of course, it doesn't look like it was built. But still a lot left, and it's just held in a very good way.
Okay, excellent. So when we get on to Red Square, the visiting of Lenin's tomb, you have lived in Moscow
my whole life. Still, I've been in mausoleum just maybe when I was just very, very young. When it was obligatory to visit this kind of stuff, so when I was young,
sure.
There was still just the last years of Soviet Union, and yeah.
Well, and I'm curious that you have seen, you know, even today there are changes going on politically in Russia. We're not going to get into the politics of Russia. An American and Russian arguing politics just doesn't seem like the best use on this show. We're more about exploring and forming lines of communication on this show. But for the Russian people, how has this experience changed in your lifetime? Obviously, in the later stages of the Soviet Union, visiting there was very different than it would be today.
Yeah, for sure. Soviet Union, it was just kind of absolutely obligatory place to go, whether you like it or whether you're not.
Well, and you certainly wouldn't say you didn't like it.
Yeah, for sure. Then now it's a little bit controversial thing because some of the people think that it's just a huge part of Russia's history and it should be left as it was. Many people think that it's not very good to leave the body laying and just crowds of people looking at it. And it's a little bit weird, of course, to have a look to go inside. But still, it's probably in some way it's a very interesting place in terms of history, in terms of culture. Absolutely, one of a kind. As for me, I didn't have my own opinion about it. It's a little bit hard question, but still, the body is there and a lot of talks are about it. And still, I believe every couple of years, someone suggests to bury it, but still, it's up there. You can have a look.
Okay. And then you mentioned St. Basil's Cathedral there as well.
Yeah, St. Basil's Cathedral, of course, it's one of the major places in Russia and one of the most iconic places to have a look. It was listed as UNESCO World Heritage Site, and I think most of the people are dreaming to get inside of it and are dreaming to have a look at it. It's very beautiful, for sure. It's absolutely stunning, absolutely iconic.
And known for its very colorful onion domes.
Yeah, which gone through big restoration, I believe, 5 years ago. Now it looks shiny, very bright, very good. So just for making pictures, of course, especially on a bright day, it's an amazing place. It's possible to get inside of this church. There's nothing special inside. You won't find any very important artifacts. Still, probably, if you're interested, you can go inside. But the most impressive, of course, from outside.
In Red Square itself, a very, very large open square, are there other things that are going on there normally? I mean, you know, I grew up in the days where we would just see, you know, Soviet parades and missiles and such parading through Red Square, but I don't know what happens there today on a daily basis.
Of course, what you have seen, of course, it's just some celebrations or some kind of parade.
Sure, right.
Until these days, there are a few days in a year which this kind of big, huge parades are held in Red Square. And especially to name a few, one of the most important is on the 9th of May. This is a huge celebration of commemorating the end of World War II. So the Russia has been the victory. No, it's a little bit controversial question. So this parade celebrates the end of World War II, and it's a really huge celebration. And this day, probably it's a little bit politically, just to show the wealth of the country, to show how good the army is, to show what we have, probably to show it to the entire world. It's a really very interesting place to see and a very interesting time, because a lot of military techniques are going through the Red Square. And definitely, you couldn't get inside of Red Square during these parades. It's absolutely official. Usually, president, this day, President Putin, he looks at this parade, a lot of veterans there, a lot of Navy. And one of the most beautiful and interesting thing is that the street close to Red Square, it's called Tverskaya Street. It's full of Navy techniques, which is preparing to go through the square. And also, the last few years, also some air forces show what they got. So they're literally air Navy planes, which are going through the city, and they're going as low as possible, at absolutely low. So it's a very beautiful show. It's very, very expensive.
And you said it was controversial. Is that the part about it that's controversial?
For Russia, it's not controversial. Russia thinks itself as the victor of World War II. Not everybody thinks that it is the same.
Okay.
Probably, yeah. And as far as I know, there's even a little story that in American schools, it is told that America was the winner of World War II.
Oh, no, no.
No? It's not
no,
right?
No, no, I think at least when my history teacher taught it, it was quite clear that a whole lot more Russians died in World War II than Americans by, you know, an order of magnitude or two. So,
yeah.
No, we will give you that.
Okay. That's great.
No, usually the way that we hear it is that it was English brains, American production, and Russian blood was what won World War II is the...
Okay. Yeah, probably it's more of the people's war, more than the country's war, because this was just very hard occasion. Still a lot to celebrate. So big celebrations in Moscow on the 9th of May. And if you will be here at this time of year, you're absolute. It's gorgeous time. It's gorgeous time of year to visit. And it's a lot to see on the 9th of May. Even if you wouldn't get on the Red Square, you would see it around the city.
Well, I think the other thing that's important for those of us who are not Russian to understand is that so much of the controversial history of what's happened in Russia since then, you know, the Cold War and some of those things, even Putin and some of the politics now, so much of it goes back to the tremendous losses in World War II and what an incredibly painful time that was.
For sure.
And how so much that Russia didn't want to do that again. So I think it's very important for people as they're going to Moscow, as they're going to Russia, just read up a little bit about that time, because it puts a lot of things in perspective. It makes you understand things a little more from a Russian point of view. So part of the question was, if I'm not there on the 9th of May, will I see street performers? Will I just see a big empty square and pigeons? What will I find there normally?
Usually it's just big, big square with lots of not that much pigeons, but lots of tourists on it. There is a lot of security on the square, so you couldn't maintain yourself just in a very, very few way. Of course, you can make selfies, you can take pictures, there's nothing about it, but still, this square is very public, and sometimes some people want to say that they're against something, so protest, there is a lot of security to check it, of course.
Okay. And then you moved on to department store, oddly enough, as your third choice, which I thought was interesting. Our big three here being the Kremlin, the Red Square, and then a department store.
Yeah, I think best thing to do at your first date.
Okay. And why a department store?
This department store is very historic in terms of Russia. It's been built even before Soviet Union. So it was just big thing during Soviet time. It was the shop where you can find some rare stuff, some rare clothes, maybe some rare food.
So this is where the party's elite would shop during the Soviet time?
Probably, yeah, probably.
So it was the one that was really stocked.
But still, it wasn't fine for these elite people to have such public shopping. So probably there was a lot of things for just major people, because it was just in the very center, in the very heart of the country. So just a lot of things they could find there, just very rare. For example, sure. In the 60s, Russian ladies were just mad about French perfumes. So just was the place to find them, maybe just by occasion, maybe just with huge lines, maybe just a couple time a year, but still it was a place to find such kind of stuff. Very funny to remember. So these days it's private property, but still very well maintained. Little bit of nostalgic flavor inside of it. You can find very, very good gastronomic shop inside of it, where you can find very expensive stuff, but still very quality stuff. You can buy some classical Russian Soviet style ice cream for some nostalgic feelings.
And what is Soviet-style ice cream? I have no idea what that would be like.
There's nothing special. There's just ice cream, which is very tasty. It's really good done, but still, it's just simply ice cream.
Okay. You threw me on that one just a little bit. Cool. And then you moved on to some of the galleries and museums. So let's go back to those in a little more detail.
Yeah, I believe the two best places to have a look to some art in Moscow is Tretyakovskaya Gallery, which is a gallery showcasing Russian art. There's only Russian art.
And for those of us who don't know Russian artists, do you have a couple favorites that we really can't understand Russian art unless we've appreciated the works of
many major names like Kandinsky or Malevich? You can find it there. There are lots of Russian artists, probably very, very classical images for Russian culture, but still they're not very famous outside of Russian.
Sure. Well, I think that's true, yeah.
Just like Alonushka, which is a member of Russian folk tale. Just Three Beers, which is very classical paint. In terms of it was very famous because it was just on the back of very classical Russian sweets. And every kid knows from their early childhood. And so on. There are many such nice stuff, which is really very, very important.
And the art in that museum, is it mostly the classical art, or does that also cover, for instance, the very stylized art of the communist period as well?
There is a little bit of communism period. I think it's not very good from my point of view. It's probably this museum is best for very classical Russian art. So, Pushkinsky Museum, I mentioned earlier, it's a museum with lots of international art. But still these days, I believe half of the time, it is closed for just any special exhibitions. For example, this day, the exhibition from Vatican Collection is held in Pushkinsky Museum, and Pushkinsky Collection now is exhibits in Vatican. So, but still, there are a few more buildings inside of this gallery, and there's a lot to see there. And for me, I can highly recommend you to have a look at the Impressionism, which are located in the Gallery of the European American Countries. There's a huge collection, a big number of paintings you can find there. So if you like this kind of stuff, absolutely worth.
And that's going to be the international artists.
Yeah.
There aren't
Russian.
Okay. I didn't know if they were Russian impressionists that I should, but don't know. Okay.
I believe I couldn't name any.
Okay. In terms of major sites that are recommended by tourists or that tourists go to, is there any site that, you know, all the guidebooks are going to tell me to go to that you would just skip, that you don't actually think is that interesting?
I believe I wouldn't recommend you to go to VDNH. It's a very classical and kitschy, one more time, it's a very kitschy place. which was built during Soviet time. And the main purpose of this complex, it's a big number of pavilions, which showed what best ever Republic of Soviet Union got. It's a very, very kitschy place.
Okay. So almost like a Soviet version of the World
Fair. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely true. So it was made just to show how good the cows in some region, or probably how...
Sure, sure.
Probably to show what was built in some republic, what is good, what is absolutely fabulous, just to show how good the country is, how it's good maintained. These days, it was reconstructed. It's still probably nice to have a look at it, but it's located far away from the city center. It's a bit tricky to get inside and really nothing much to have a look at this place, probably if you're not in this kitschy kind of style.
And you mentioned kitschy. That sort of leads me to I hear talk of the nostalgia for the Soviet days or the things that were in the Soviet days. And I want to use the term nostalgia. Is that the right term to use? Or do they use that only in more East Germany and not as much in Soviet Union? Soviet in Russia.
I believe this day there is a little bit of nostalgia. Some nice Soviet Union style things which were absolutely killed during first years of Russia, maybe 20 years ago. Of course, it's usually such things that happened when government is changing everything. Everybody says everything that was before
it threw everything
we need to throw everything out, but still probably these days a lot of things are getting rethinked. It's an interesting stuff now, because probably many people are thinking of that ice cream from their childhood, that beers, from their candies, and many people, well, they work with it. Even probably one of the popular milk in Russian stores, it is styled with that retro pack, which was used for many, many years during Soviet Union time.
And is there a good place that people can go, or a beer that they should try to get in touch with some of that nostalgia?
There's no any particular place. Probably I didn't know what to recommend you in this term. Probably GUM would be a nice place for it, because they work with it. It's part of their brand. It's part of their community. Still, there are lots of any other things which I want to talk about. So, another UNESCO World Heritage Site inside of Moscow is Novodevichy Monastery. It's located a little bit out of the city center, but still quite close to the center. Absolutely worth going to. It's a very classic Russian-style monastery. It's very well maintained, of course, due to donations. It's good to explore some Christian art up there, some Christian architecture up there. Absolutely worth visiting. Place. Another place which I also can recommend to visit is, of course, Moscow Metro, which is very famous around the world. And this day, Moscow Metro system is one of the busiest metro systems in the world. It's very interesting that due even to this fact, it's still a lot to see there, but still I can't recommend anybody who didn't want to ride on this metro to go inside of it in a working day, because there are absolutely huge crowds, especially on peak hours, a trash hour. It's absolutely packed.
You're talking about going to see the metro as a site, and I'm not sure that everybody's getting this, so I want to stop. What you're saying, as I understand it, is that because this was the capital of the Soviet Union, and because they were celebrating a lot of things, that each of the stations themselves are really a work of art.
Yeah, absolutely. At these days, when metro was built in Moscow, it was absolutely a unique place. It just was kind of place to show how wealthy the country is, how good it could be maintained. I believe there was huge, huge amount of efforts were put inside of it, and the major architectures made the design of the stations, and many of the stations in the center of the city have unique design and a very monumental design. It could be dedicated to some Soviet art, maybe some workers, maybe some farmers. There's a metro station which one of the most beautiful is Belaruska metro station, which was built to show the friendship between Russia and Belarusia. There's a lot of this beautiful, beautiful stuff, which is very nice to explore. Also, Moscow Metro just got a lot of history inside of it, just got a lot of little secrets inside of it. It goes in many, many major places.
Wait. You say little secrets inside of it, and you didn't give us any. So you need to give us at least one secret there.
So there are some secret stations in the metro, which now are closed. And probably if you have a ride from metro station Kurskaya to Baumanskaya, you can have a closer look at the window. And while riding, you will find closed metro station. You will see it from the windows. You will just pass it through. There is no light inside of it, but still you can find a lot of there. Also, there are a lot of myths about metro in Moscow. There are the myths, and probably nobody knows for sure, is it true or no, but still there is even a few books about it, which said that there is a parallel metro system in Moscow, which leads through the major places, so, and it's used only for government, for security reasons, and so on. And later I will tell you about it.
And you're neither confirming nor denying this myth of a parallel.
There is no proof, but there's nothing I can be sure it's not true.
When you're mentioning the metro system too, is my understanding is if we're trying to get around Moscow, not only is the metro system beautiful, but also practical because Moscow traffic is not great.
Yeah. This is a really big problem with traffic in Moscow, and it's absolute working day and rush hours. I can't recommend to use any taxis or cabs because it can take you ages to get from one point to another, maybe even if they're 2 kilometers away from each other. It's a hard thing. It's such thing has happened because Moscow is quite a wealthy city and there's a lot of business here. There's a lot of money here and it's concentrated the money from all of the country. So lots of business here and people here have opportunity to buy cars. And I believe there are more cars here in Moscow than people. And many people use these cars. But still, unfortunately, our roads are not made for this. Though Moscow is a city that was built long ago and it wasn't made for this. And a lot of people, they work in the center of city, so they want to ride there each morning. And it's a big problem because the traffic could be very terrific. You can spend hours getting from one point to another if you use a taxi. But still these days, things are getting a little bit better. And this was made by point. There are now huge restrictions by using car in the city center.
Similar to what London has had to do, yeah.
Yeah, probably. There's no free parking inside of the city center, so people just couldn't go here without thinking, oh, I need to pay for this. And this really works. Also, there are some streets in the very center of the city which were closed for traffic, or where the traffic now is hugely limited. For example, there was a street which had 4 lines of traffic and only one left, just going only one way. And of course, nobody can use it. It's just very high restriction. And just people simply didn't have an opportunity to go on their car where they want to. But the thing is that the government of Moscow is trying to present any other ways to get inside of the city. So now there is a huge number of public transport. So it's fine to use buses. They have a separate lane for buses, for trolley buses.
Oh, that's good to know. Interesting.
Yeah, also, it's a very good thing. Also, at warm time of the year, now there is a big bike system in Moscow. So you can rent a bike. Just you can make it, for example, in London, absolutely the same scheme as in London. You buy a day pass, which costs you around $2.50 this day. And you can use this bike for 24 hours without no limits. The only limit that each ride no more than 30 minutes. And if you want to ride more, you need to pay $50 for each half an hour. It's very handy, though there is only one little problem. Not many people on the streets are getting used with this bike traffic. And it's a little bit tricky to get on the busy streets on a bike, probably maybe just like on many other places. But still, there are some separate bike lanes and things are getting better in this stuff. I think we need a couple more years for people to get used to it. Sometimes you need to stop right on the street very urgently because people didn't want to give you away. Sometimes people walk right on the bike lane. I don't know why. They simply walk. So you need to stop not to crash on them. But still, it's really, really, really great. It was impossible to imagine this kind of thing maybe 2 or 3 years ago. Almost no bikes inside the city. And now it's a big deal. It's really working good.
And you mentioned when the weather is warm in Moscow. Now, Moscow is known to have some cold winters. Russia is known to have some cold winters, a fact that apparently escaped both Napoleon and Hitler, much to their demise. But When would you recommend we go to Moscow in terms of for the best weather or for the best time of year to see, not necessarily best weather, best time of year to see Moscow?
Definitely the period between mid-April and early October, the best time of year to go here. It's nice weather here. The rest of the year, it could be not as good. Probably not the question about the temperature, but this the question because of the dust on the streets, dust from melting snow on the streets. And sometimes it's really hard to go because of it. And also it's a very gray time of year. So there's no much sun. There's no much blue sky. It's a little bit boring on the streets. And the only thing that you want when you go to the streets, you want to go to some place, it's a little bit hard. So at this cold time of year, you will miss many great things, and I cannot recommend you to go from November till April. Probably the only time which is interesting is time during New Year's holidays, because a lot of things are going on here. For example, if you want to experience some beautiful things like skating right on the Red Square, it's very beautiful, very epic. There is renting, so you just can go, just enjoy it, very fun. Lots of people, very, very beautiful.
And do they set up a really large skating rink then?
Yeah, there's a large skating rink. There is some fair, New Year fair, with lots of goods, with just some glint veins, with just some probably mild wine and so on.
So similar to some of the European Christmas markets.
Yeah, absolutely. It was just copied from the European market. The only thing is that Christmas is not such a huge deal, although
right,
it is celebrated,
so
and it is celebrated on the 7th of January, not on the 24th of December.
Right, celebrated on what we would say is Epiphany, when the wise men came.
Yeah.
Is the Orthodox way to do it, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So New Year is a much more bigger celebrations in Moscow. There's lots of things going on, and it's a very nice time probably to visit the city. Probably the rest of the cold time of year I can't recommend you.
Excellent. Now, we kind of did some of this in the middle of you talking about things to go and see. Are there other places that you would recommend we see in Moscow?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm still in the middle of my list of the very...
Well, we're talking about a large city, a city of over 12 million people. So.
Absolutely, even more. These days, it's just like an official statistics, it's around 15 million. And it is believed that it's around 20 million. So there's really a lot of things to do. So the next thing I want to mention is, of course, Bolshoi Theatre, which is one of the major theatres in the world. And Russia is very known, very well known as the ballet capital of the world. So absolutely, if you want to go and if you want to see a little bit of ballet, Bolshoi Theatre is the place to go in Moscow for it. It's absolutely a classical, very famous building, which is located right in the city center. And the best thing about it that for the last, I believe, around 10 years, it's gone through a very big renovation. I believe I wouldn't be much wrong if I would say that it was halfway rebuilt, at least from inside. The whole infrastructure of it was rebuilt. They got new scene, but still every historic element of it, every decoration element was left. It was really big work, which involved years of working, which involved a lot of financial support from it. But still now, Bolshoi Theatre is on its best. It's truly really shiny. It's truly new. It's amazingly beautiful experience. And not long ago, I visited by myself. It's absolutely a stunning thing to do and absolutely a stunning thing to see. The hardest thing about Bolshoi Theatre is that it's a little bit tricky to get inside of it because you need to buy tickets for sure. And think is Russia wouldn't be Russia if many people wanted to get inside of it and someone will sell these tickets not an original price. So a lot of people just trying to use it and they're trying to resell these tickets. The administration of the theater is doing big work to prevent it, but still they're not very good in it, to be true. Not long ago, they opened an opportunity to buy these tickets in advance on the theater's website. And usually they start selling tickets around 2 months in advance before the performance. But still, it's a little bit hard to get good price tickets because they are selling very, very quickly. I want to give you just a little idea of what could happen if you wouldn't do it in advance. And there's a very nice New Year's tradition. We talked about New Year, so I'll be back to it. There's a nice New Year, very classical Russian tradition to celebrate New Year's Eve. The thing is that you will dress very well, and on the 31st of December, you will go to Bolshoi Theatre. And each year, for many, many years, they show the same ballet, Nutcracker, which is very beautiful Christmas New Year ballet, absolutely.
Well, it's very popular here as well, and since it's a Russian composer.
Sure. And in this blue, and it's absolutely a classical thing to do, to see this ballet and then go probably home, because New Year for many people celebrating New Year is a home holiday, but probably someone will go to restaurants or to some friends. And after this show. So many people want to do it, of course. And of course, the number of tickets is limited. And once I want to get there, I specially marked the day of the starting of the selling of the tickets. And I didn't have an opportunity to go to the ticket desk in the early morning when they were opening. I only can get there just around 5 hours after it was opened. And as you can understand, there were no tickets left. So 5 hours after the starting of the sale, and there were no tickets. But still, it's very, very highly demand performance. On the average day, you definitely can find a ticket. The thing is that it's quite pricey thing. Average price for the tickets is $150. I think without no problems, you can get a ticket from the price of around $1,000. But still, I'm not sure you wouldn't want to pay that much.
$1,000. Wow. Yeah, that be a little pricey for me.
Yeah, that's a price for a good place, but still it's a luxury event. So I believe it's worth it, but still you need to be prepared for it.
Okay.
Another very classical Moscow thing to do for tourists and probably for locals, because it's very enjoyable, is to have boat rides on Moscow River. It's a large river which is going through the whole city, and it connects the major places around the city. And it's a beautiful thing to do. The best thing that now, these days, there's an opportunity to have this ride not only on the warm time of year, but still it's opened at winter time. There are lots of different boat companies which have this ride. Usually it goes from Moscow Business District till Kremlin. It's a really epic ride where there are beautiful views. You can see Moscow State University. You can see Kremlin. You can see huge skyscrapers of Moscow City. We'll talk about them a little bit later. You can see a lot of other different stuff like monumental Stalin's architecture, some of the Stalin's skyscrapers. And of course, it's all surrounded with just beautiful atmosphere and relaxing time. Absolutely worth it, just like I believe in many cities around the world which got river, absolutely worth doing. The thing that I can recommend is using the boats of Radisson Hotel. There's a huge Radisson property in Moscow, and it's located at one of the Stalin skyscrapers. Their boats are a little bit more expensive than other boats. They cost you around $15 for a ride. But still, it's a very comfortable, very good boat, and absolutely worth having a little bit more luxury experience. They have some restaurants inside of it. They have some viewing decks. They have very beautiful boats, and they are all year round. So I highly recommend you to do it if you would spend your time in Moscow.
Excellent. Yeah, I don't think I'd ever heard that. That's one of the advantages of having somebody who actually knows Moscow.
Yeah. So the next spot, which is interesting to talk about and to mention. Moscow is not very well known as a modern city, but still there is a huge modern business district in Moscow. It's called Moscow City. Mm-hmm. It's probably, it could be a little bit surprising for many of your listeners, or probably not, but 4 of the 5 tallest buildings in Europe are located in Moscow, are located at this building. And this day...
I did not know that.
Yeah, and this day, the tallest building in Europe also located there. 3 years ago, 2012, the Shard at London was the tallest building in Europe. And mm-hmm. now it's only on the 4th place. And the 3 first place are of the buildings of the Moscow city. It's the tallest building now is Federation of Vostok Tower. It is 374 meters tall. Not as tall probably as Northern America or just like some kind of Dubai and so on, but still quite tall for Europe. It was finished just in 2015. Still, it's very, very modern. And this district in Moscow, it's got big history. It was the process of building was started in early 90s, and it involved a lot of dream and a lot of politics and a lot of money. Still, the first plans were that the works should be finished in 2006, but still, it's in progress. But a lot of things are done now, and there's a chance that the works will be finished in 2018. And still, even now, though there are huge construction works are going on, there's a lot to see there. It's very, very scenic. The funny stuff about this, though, the tallest building there, but still, there's no any viewing platform on any of this building.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Almost all of there just got some offices or flats inside of it. But still, Russia wouldn't be Russia if there wouldn't be a way to do it. I didn't know exactly the history of it, but I'm sure that it is done in such a way. As I mentioned, there are some apartments up there. And some of the owners of these apartments, they use these apartments as an opportunity for someone to go there and to have a look from the Moscow from there. So absolutely, just regular apartments. Nobody lives there. They just probably rent, or they're just owners. I don't know exactly. They just give advertisement. They just gather groups. They just have a little walk around the district. It's quite huge. There's a lot to see. If you're into photography, you can make just very, very scenic pictures there. And still you can go and have a look to the Moscow from the top. It's not probably the top of the building, but still it's quite high. I believe it should be quite secure, but still it's not legally, it's not officially. They're simply doing their job. Nobody says no, you cannot do it, but still...
it's capitalism at work.
Yeah, absolutely. But still, there's nothing to do, like, just with viewing platform at Burj Khalifa, where you can need to reserve your tickets in advance and pay a lot of money, but still have good services. You won't find it there. But still, it's not wild. It's just funny. Probably some students doing it.
How would you find something like that if you wanted to do it?
There's some advertisement on internet, so just observation desk at Moscow City will give you some results of these companies. So what else you can see at this district? Around 15 skyscrapers, which are located in a quite little area. Also, there's a huge mall there. It's one of the largest central located mall, so if you want to do some shopping, now it's good place to do it in Moscow. So probably I wouldn't recommend you to make shopping in the central located shops, but go there. This district is not right on the center of the city. It is located on the banks of Moscow River, but still a little bit outside. So I believe it's around 5 kilometers from Kremlin.
Okay. The other thing I'm curious about is nightlife in Moscow. You talked about Moscow being a modern city. Where would people find nightlife? What would you recommend?
Nightlife is the world of its own kind in Moscow. There's a lot of things that are going on. Still, nightlife in Moscow is a little bit closed.
For tourists, you mean?
Not for tourists, even maybe for locals. It's the thing about Russian mentality. I think that many Russians think of themselves as very unique persons, and everybody wants to be VIP. It's absolutely the thing, and the best places you can find in Moscow that probably call themselves the best places would be the places which have some limitations of entrance. So probably almost every fashion place just got dress control, they just got face control, so you need to dress well, you need to look gorgeous to get to some fashionable place. But still, there are lots of just simple, friendly places to chill out, to enjoy.
Do you have one or two that you would recommend for our listeners?
I think I couldn't recommend any particular, especially for those who came outside, just as though I'm not sure about the security of this stuff. I believe it's good, but still, there are some things that many Russians... There are no tourists, almost no tourists. There are probably just some expats who know exactly what they are doing. So I believe I wouldn't recommend any particular place to go for clubbing, for night clubbing, for dancing. There are some popular brands like Pacha, which is located very close to Kremlin. Just same Pacha as all over the world. I've been in many clubs around the world. Absolutely the same. So it's a good stuff. Definitely, I wouldn't recommend any particular place, although there are some things and mentality of Russians where you need to be absolutely sure what you are doing. And probably the best thing you can do if you want to explore some nightlife, I would recommend you to have someone to guide you, definitely.
And you bring up security. Safety is an issue that I did want to talk about. Moscow was probably scarier in the days of the Soviet Union for those of us who were from the West to travel to, but probably safer than it may be since. What kind of recommendations would you give in terms of safety? Anything specific that people should know?
Moscow is relatively safe city, especially city center. Definitely, I wouldn't recommend you to go outside of city center at night because some of the districts could be not very good. I think just like in many big cities, not every district is good, but still city center is well lightened. Mm-hmm. There are almost no dark places up there. there are some police. There are a lot of cameras on the street, security cameras, I mean, on the street. So I think you could be relatively fine. Of course, there are such stuff as pickpocket. So you need to be aware and just take just general precautions, especially in the tourist area. And one of these tourist area, and just like have read in news, some news just today that very famous Arbat Street in Moscow, which is now simply the major tourist street in the city. Also, it is called one of the most unsecured street in the city. I believe it's connected due to this tourist stuff. A lot of people go there. There are huge crowds. And to be sincere, as for me, I try to avoid this street on every occasion. I try to go another way, but not passing through it, because it's very busy and not very interesting.
So you say less secure, so that's just there are more pickpockets there? It's not that I'm physically at risk, but just need to watch my valuables like I need to in any big tourist spot.
Absolutely, okay. Probably there are a little bit more drunken people up there, well, which could be a little bit aggressive.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that everybody drinking vodka on the street, but still a little bit of strange people, which is, I believe, absolutely normal stuff this day for very popular places with lots of people. So I believe nothing unordinary, but still I couldn't recommend you this street as a great attraction. Nothing to do there from my point of view.
Well, we have now one of the longer episodes of the Amateur Traveler, so we need to start winding this down.
if you want to.
But I know you could go on for hours. And we'll link people over to your website too who want to have more information on Moscow. But before we get to our last, say, four questions, anything else that we can't leave without mentioning these other spots?
Okay, I would like to recommend you the place that's absolutely not on a tourist spot usually, but still it's a tourist place. This place is called Cold War Museum at the Bunker 42 on Taganka Street. It's a very interesting place with a very interesting history. Bunker 42, it was the place which was constructed right in the center of the city in the 50s. And it occupies around 7,000 square meters at the depth of 65 meters below the ground. It was built during Cold War period, and it was built to protect from atomic explosion. It was built for Navy, it was built for Soviet politics, and this place, it shows all the danger and all the preparations to the Cold War which were made during that period. The interesting and very unique thing about this that the progress of building this place was stopped due to the lack of financials, bunker was opened and it was sold to the private owner, and now this bunker is private owned. And the owner made it as a museum. It's not an average museum, so it's a little bit tricky to get inside of it. And absolutely, I recommend you to make a reservation in advance because the visiting are limited. But still, there are lots of things going on. There is a museum, there's some exhibition. Also, this place is used for some funny thing, for some corporate events. So if you've got a company which wants to celebrate some occasion, you can rent a place there. But still, even paintball games are held there. It's a little bit hard to find this place. The interesting thing is that on top of this bunker, there is a building. This building is an absolute fake, although it looks like an average building. There's nothing inside of it. There are just some windows and nothing inside to look. But still, you go down and you go to this bunker. As I said, reservation is very recommended, and there are two opportunities to visit that place. The one opportunity is the major opportunity. We'll go just with the main floor of the tourists which are going there, and I need to say there are not as much people going there. Still, you will see just major renovated places of there. You will see just some Stalin's cabinet. You will have a look at some movie which will tell you the history of the Cold War and why this place was built.
And the movie is in Russian, I assume.
I believe they have an opportunity to show it in English, but I'm not sure on it. Still, you will see some documentary, and I think you will understand the main things. There's no big deal. Also, they show some simulation of nuclear danger, just with some alarms, with some lights and so on. It's just funny thing for tourists, but still just for fun. The other way to visit this bunker, it's a private tour. They made it for a group up to 10 people, and they have got a fixed price for it. It will cost you around $250. And it's really a rare opportunity, because if you will get this tour through the hidden parts of this bunker, they will show you the not reconstructed parts of it. They even didn't have light there, so you will need to wear some special clothes just to protect your clothes from some dirt, which is just historic dirt from probably from time. You will need to wear a helmet, you will need to wear some lights, but still an absolutely unique opportunity to see the Moscow below the ground, which is really very rare, and there's almost no legal opportunity to do it. Although the hidden part of the underground Moscow is a big deal here, so you can go there and explore the Moscow from this point of view. Probably you couldn't make great photos there, but still, even you can hear some metro station. So there are some metro tunnels which are surround this bunker. And even this, when this bunker was built, it was everybody thought that it was just metro tunnels. But still, it was just separate parts which were made just for nuclear. So yeah, I absolutely can recommend. Once I did it with my friends, and an absolutely unique experience. But still, absolutely, you need to make reservation prior to visit, and probably even prepaid for them to fix your time. But still, absolutely worth your efforts, because it's unique and nothing like else. I think not many people doing.
Excellent, excellent. I'm absolutely glad that you included that. Last four questions.
Okay.
And I know we could go on. I know I'm cutting you off here, but I'm standing in the most beautiful spot in all of Moscow. Where am I standing and what am I looking at?
The bridge not far away from Kremlin. It connects two banks of Moscow River. On one side, there will be huge Christ the Savior Cathedral, which is quite modern and was rebuilt. But still, it's a pedestrian bridge. And there's a very beautiful view to the Kremlin, a little bit Kremlin from the top. And there's a very beautiful view to the Moscow River. You can see just some historical places. You can see some beautiful places. You can see a little bit of skyscrapers from one side of you and Kremlin from another side of you. And also I can recommend you to go there just around sunset, because sun goes down from the side of the church, which is a very huge building. It's a beautiful time to see, to go there. And if you're looking for some scenic pictures to do in Moscow, that's definitely a place to go.
Excellent. When I go to Moscow, one thing that's going to make me laugh and say, only in Moscow.
Probably you will laugh if I will tell you that you have a chance to go sunbathing in Moscow.
Well, okay.
And it's a huge, huge thing now. The thing is that this last few years, the parks have been renovated a lot in Moscow, and there are lots of parks with opportunity at the warm time of year to lay on the sun, to relax, even to have some free yoga classes. And one of the funnest things for me was that right on the banks of Moscow River, which for me in my imagination is more a river of ice. This year they put just some sunbeds on the banks of this river, and absolutely many people enjoyed it. It was great.
Excellent. And then last two questions. Finish this sentence. You really know you're in Moscow when what?
When you have an opportunity to have a beautiful walk around the city and one of the Moscow Circle lines, which is Bulvarna line, and you have a beautiful walk surrounded with beautiful people, and maybe just go and take some cheap dish at some monastery, which could be some pirog, which is classical Russian dish, and you're feeling yourself relaxed, and you're feeling yourself like you have a little walk to the 18th or 19th century, because it's a little bit of this stuff.
And if you had to summarize Moscow in just three words, what three words would you use?
Powerful, slashing, and innovated. Slashing.
The second one was slashing?
I mean, that goes just in a very, very, very fast way. Probably the things are getting changed in a very big way. And probably a lot of things are going on, and you even didn't know where to look sometimes, so which directions to look around. So that's why probably it could slash you the first time.
Excellent. Alex, thank you so much for coming on the show. Where can people read more about your travels?
You can read more about my travels at my English blog, which is alexblogtravels.com. Also, probably if you have any Russian audience, I have another Russian blog, which is alexblog.ru. And also, I have an Instagram where I'm Alex Block.
Excellent. And is there one particular article about Moscow that you would recommend that we send people to on your blog?
Yeah, I think these days on my English site, no recommendations, so I didn't make it. Just these days, English site is more pick of the day, so no articles on the pictures.
Okay, excellent. Alex, thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us your love for Moscow.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
In news of the community, I received an email last week that really entertained me and made my whole week because it wasn't from a listener of the show. It was from my daughter. And she wrote that a friend of hers from school, John and his wife, Caitlin, wrote her and said, among other things, I was looking for a good travel podcast through Google and stumbled onto Amateur Traveler. I really like the way it focused on really specific places and regions. I enjoyed hearing about travel to far-flung places, and Caitlin loved hearing different takes on places we've been. We've become quite obsessed and hardly watch TV anymore because we just listen to old episodes of the podcast instead. We were listening just this afternoon to one from 2010 about Pittsburgh, and the guest on the show said something about Bethlehem. And then your dad, all in caps, said his daughter went to school in Bethlehem, and Caitlin and I both wondered if it might be Lehi. Then we realized it was from 2010 and that his last name was Christensen. And then we had one of those crazy-eyed looking at each other in slow motion moments. It was crazy. We'd listened to episodes in the past where he talks about taking trips with his daughter, and Caitlin would say, "Wouldn't that be so great to have Chris as your dad?" Ha ha ha, I swear, we're literally addicted to the show. I've been doing my own podcast about movies and such. And really like it. Caitlin wants us to travel to one random place enough times that we become experts on it, and I can be a guest on the show. Thanks so much, John. Anybody who can make me look better to my daughter or my son really gets bonus points from me. And John's podcast, by the way, is johnlikesmovies.com. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. If you want to encourage my daughter or son to listen to the show, drop me an email. I'll tell you their addresses. Don't forget the Amateur Traveler trip to Cambodia, April 2016. You can find more information at amateurtraveler.com/trip, which is the closed Facebook group. And as always, thanks so much for listening. One more cathedral, I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today. Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcast FREE.